Hari Ho Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahabiryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavadhitamastu Mavirvishavahai Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Om Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Right, so you remember is that in inference then we're basically, you have three parts, the sadhya, it's the major aspect, hetu, or linga, this is the middle, and then you have paksha, which is the smaller. So then what you're trying to do is, you can see the smaller and the middle, but you can't see the major. But because the middle is connected to the minor and connected to the major, if you can connect, establish that association, then you can say that the minor is connected to the major, right? Does that make sense? Right? You can see A and B, right? But B is also connected with C. It's always connected with C. Therefore, if you see B, C must be there. So then you can say A and C are connected. Right? Does that make sense? We're on, what, 33, logical grounds for entrance? Yeah. Vyapti, meaning the state of pervasiveness, implies both to that which pervades and that which is pervaded. For example, in the entrance of fire and smoke, smoke is pervaded and fire is the pervader. Here smoke is always accompanied by fire. Wherever there is smoke, there will also be fire. The reverse, however, is not necessarily true. It is possible to have fire without smoke. For example, a Bunsen burner. But there are examples in which both the pervader and the pervaded coexist permanently. For example, fire and heat. There are, therefore, two kinds of concomitants, equivalent and non-equivalent. Right? Does that make sense? Because there's always what we're establishing now is what is that universal relationship that's needed to make it work, right? Hills are going to be there. The point's going to be where the location is or what you're trying to connect something to. That's always going to be there, right? But what you're trying to establish, then that's between two things, which have to have a universal principle. So this universal principle may go both ways, or you have one, you have the other, or it may only be only one way, right? Example is of the smoke. If you have smoke, there will be fire, but you can have fire without smoke. So that's unequal. But heat and light, those will go together. Wherever there's heat, there will be light, right? And light is caused by heat. Right? Non-equivalent concomitants, asamavyapti, is an invariable concomitance between two unequal entities, such as smoke and fire. It has already been shown that in this type of concomitance, one entity may be inferred from the other, but not vice versa. Right? In other words, you can infer it one way, but you can infer it the other way. Equivalent vyapti, samu vyapti, is an invariable concomitance between two coexistent terms, either which can be inferred from the other. For example, a chair is a nameable thing because a chair is noble. Whatever is noble is nameable. Here, nameable and noble can both be inferred from each other. Right? If you can name it, means you can know it's there. If you know it's there, it can be named. Does that make sense? Yeah? Concomitance denotes a relationship of coexistence. Sahacharla. But not every instance of coexistence is an example of concomitance. Fire, for example, often coexists with smoke, yet it may exist without smoke. The coexistent relationship of fire and smoke depends on certain conditions like temperature and wetness. The condition in which the relation of coexistence depends is called upadhi. And for an inference to be valid, the relationship between the middle and major terms of the syllogism must be independent of any and all conditions. In other words, a valid concomitance represents an invariable and unconditional concomitant relationship, nitya anupadika sambandha, between the middle and major terms of the syllogism. In other words, if you're seeing the fire, you can't say that there's smoke. So therefore, you wouldn't be able to say there's smoke on the hill by inference, because there might not be. But if you see the smoke, you can say there's fire. Does that make sense? In other words, it has to be a relationship that always exists, right? Because if it only exists one way, you can only use that thing the one way. But if it exists both ways, then you can use it either way. But what's recommended are those things that it works both ways. That's always your strongest point. Does that make sense? So you pick an inference, if it's both ways, then no one can argue it. Does that make sense? Okay, so upadhi will mean what is the condition on which they are connected. So you want to find a condition, in this case, that they are connected. Otherwise, if the condition's not met, then there'll be no connection. Right? If the fire may have smoke, if, you know, it's a little bit wet, it's not hot enough, so many other things like that. You know? But if it's not like that, then you're going to have a problem. Does that make sense? So you have to see that the upadhi is correct. That the condition in which it will be that relationship, or that concomitance, then you have to see that it's, how do you say, that it exists. Otherwise, if it doesn't exist, you have a problem. Right? What happened? Oh, that was my head cracked or something. Okay, so the vyapti is state of pervasiveness. Okay. How does one know that a relationship is invariable and unconditional? Vedanta's reply that concomitance is established by the contradicted experiences of the relationships between two things. Right? The relationship that is there between two things, there's no contradiction. That means both ways there's a relationship. Right? But according to Nyaya, concomitance is established through the perception of classes. Samanya lakshana perception. Right. Which has been discussed early in this chapter in the section on extraordinary perceptions. Actually, the Nyaya method of inference uses inductive reasoning. That is, it draws a particular conclusion on the grounds of a general and universally known truth. The universal truth is considered to fall within the range of vyapti. Right? Because vyapti means the relationship between the known and the unknown. Right? In other words, the hill you know, but the point is you're not talking about the hill, you're talking about the fire on the hill. Right? So that's indicated by the smoke. Right? So then the smoke is the important element. So the relationship between the smoke and the fire is what's important. If that can be established, because you can't see the fire, then you can establish that the hill and the fire have a relationship. Right? So that's what you're trying to establish. So how do you say? Then you have to find a truth that's always there. Does that make sense? Okay, perception of classes. That was then Lokika. Okay, Alokika Jnana Samanya. Okay. Samanya Lakshana. How does one know that all people are mortal? One cannot come to this realization by ordinary perception, because the mortality of all people in all times cannot be physically perceived by the senses. But because a person is never perceived without his personhood, that is the class essence or universality of all human beings, then a conclusion can be made based on that essence. Person is known as a person because of the presence of personhood in him. The direct perception of personhood is the medium through which all people, or the class of people, are perceived. To perceive personhood means to perceive all people as individuals, in which the characteristic resides. The perception of all people is due to the perception of the universality of humanity in all people. Therefore, this type of knowledge is called the extraordinary perception of classes. Right? So that's the Samanya Lakshana. It means, in other words, the class, why do you call it a class? Because it has a common nature that fits everyone in that class. Does that make sense? So, therefore, you are trying to establish in the Nyaya that this relationship between them, the Vyapti, is based on this, because that's always there. It's universal. Does that make sense? Because you're dealing with the nature of it. Right? So that would be, you would want to use that kind of perception. Does this make sense? Yes? No? Possibly? The universal truth is considered to fall within the range of Vyapti. In Nyaya, there are three types of inductive analysis, or generalization. The first is anvaya, or uniform agreement in presence. This type of inductive process arises from observing a relationship in which, if one constituent is present, then in every instance the other constituent is also present. For example, wherever there is smoke, there is fire. The second type of inductive analysis is the obverse of the first, and is called uniform agreement in absence, vyatireka. So in other words, one is that it's always there, the other is that it's absence. In this method, a negative universal relationship or invariable concomitance is observed. For example, wherever there is no fire, there is no smoke. Right? Or if there's light, there's no darkness. Or if there's darkness, there's no light. Right? It means you can't, the two don't have, they have an inverse relationship, right? Light and dark are related. When one's not there, the other is present. Does that make sense? So that's inverse. So you can establish it that way. Otherwise, you establish it because there's a universal relationship. Right? Because of the nature of it, right? It means fire by nature produces smoke, but only under certain conditions. But smoke, its nature is it is the result of a not well burning fire. You know what I'm saying? There's something about it that's not burning at a very at the full rate, so therefore it generates smoke. Right? So they're connected directly, while the other is in, you know, in reverse. Right? In this the third kind of inductive process is a combination of the first and second methods. In this method, known as uniform agreement in both presence and absence, anvaya vyatireka, or vyabhichara graha. Both get, because vyabhichari is part of bhava, and that you get the symptoms that are there when there is the in other words, when the relationship is manifest, they manifest as side results. Right? So they're, because both constituents of a relationship are always found together. Neither is ever present without the other. From this, it is inducted that there must exist a natural relationship in invariable concomitance between them. So that would naturally be the strongest. Right? Because then always it'll apply. The other one, then it leaves it open, because in one way or another, if you can prove the other's there, then you can say it doesn't exist. The relationship doesn't exist. These three methods of generalization demonstrate a systematic technique for inductive reasoning. The most crucial concern, however, in any systematic inference is how to make certain that concomitance, the logical basis for the inference, is valid, that is, free from limiting conditions, upadis, right? Because the upadis are the condition. Right? It's just like we're conditioned, that's because we have upadis, right? It means upadi, we think that we're born in this place, or we're this age, or we're this height. You know, something that is a designation is actually not connected to it. Right? We're not the body. Right? But so, identifying with the body is an upadi. So here then, yeah. So here then, the upadi is establishing a condition, right? So we're conditioned souls, therefore there's upadis. So the conditioning, that is upadi. It's something that doesn't belong. So this condition will make it that the relationship may exist or may not exist. Does that make sense? If the wood is wet, then there'll be smoke, right? Or if it has lots of sap, there'll be smoke. Or does that make sense? It's only very small, but there's a lot of wood, there'll be smoke. Right? So these are conditions, upadis. So then, what one is looking for is one has to see that the example that you're giving, there are no upadis. Because if there are, then someone can argue on that upadi. Right? It's not a. This process of ensuring that vyaptis are free from all vitiating conditions is called upadhinirasa. One way of ensuring this is by the repeated observation of both constituents of a relationship under all possible circumstances to make certain that the relationship is in fact invariable. Right? In other words, you see the relationship, but then you see all these things are there, so there's no variable. Right? So you check it from different angles until you see that, yes, under all conditions, it applies. Right? Because otherwise, if it doesn't apply in a certain condition, that's the weakness, and then your inference may be incorrect. You may be correct, but it could be proven incorrect because of the condition. Right? Does that make sense? Another way is to employ hypothetical critical argument, or tarka. But Nyaya places the greatest emphasis on samanya lakshana, the perception of classes, as the major means for ensuring the validity of vyaptis. Right? Just like in perception, then the strongest perception is that of something directly seen with the senses that can be confirmed that that's what it is. Right? The logika, ordinary, because you're dealing with perception. Well, as soon as you get into alogika, so its perception is based on the ability of the mind to then understand things further beyond the perception. Right? That's not as strong. Like if you look at it, the prasad, and then you, by looking at it, it looks like it's well cooked, and you say, you know, that looks very tasty, you know. But someone else may argue, right? But if you say, that's a cauliflower sabji, there's no argument, right? Because it's based on the direct perception that is confirmable, right? If you don't know what it is, you're not sure, right? Because of the nature of it, like that, they've used so much spices, you can't tell if it's a cauliflower or a broccoli. Right, then you have a problem because you can't definitely say this is what it is. Does that make sense? So then you have to take it back to its subject. Right? You know what I'm saying? In other words, you have to take a ground that is strong. Does that make sense? And so here then so then of all those different ways of understanding it, that's the strongest in perception. So an inference then what is based on this samanya lakshana, or by the nature of it, you know, the quality that can't be removed from it, and that, so that's the quality is there, then those that quality is always present in the relationship, right? Or you have to be able to be very certain that the conditions that could make it invalid aren't present. Does that make sense? But otherwise, that's the strongest one, is that one based on its inherent nature and the relationship is always present. Does that make sense? Then your inference is strong. Classifications of inference. Nyaya provides three general classification systems for inference. Is that here? No, this just goes these points. Okay. The first classification system is based on psychological grounds. The second is based on nature of vyapti, or the universal relationship between the middle and major terms. And the third is based on the logical construction of the inference. Okay. So psychological, the nature of the relationship between the middle and the major terms, and then how you logically construct it. So you can't just do it through, you've logically gone through it, so then everyone can see the steps are not going to be have a problem, right? The other is that it's very clear, so you've made the point, and it's obvious, right? Or then psychological. According to the first term of class system of classification, there are two kinds of inference. Svartha, meaning for oneself, and parartha, meaning for others. In svartha, purpose of the inference is for one to gain correct knowledge by oneself and for himself. In this kind of inference, the whole process of reasoning is internal. One employs systematic logical reasoning to protect oneself from confusion and doubt and to arrive at correct inferential knowledge. Right? In other words, you are gaining the knowledge for yourself, so therefore through your own observation and the logical reasoning and all that is within one's own mind. And you're trying to protect yourself from any doubt or wrong action. Right? Does that make sense? So no one's going to see the process. Right? Parartha, on the other hand, the inference is meant for others. Here someone is trying to prove the truth of his view. For instance, a man who is convinced of the existence of fire on a hill would use parartha when attempting to convince others of the fire's existence. The second classification system divides inference into three categories. So the second then is what we were dealing with before, which means on the nature of vyapti, what we first discussed. Purvavat, Seshavat, and Samanyatodrishta. Both Purvavat and Seshavat inferences display casual informality between the middle and major terms, while Samanyatodrishta inferences exhibit non-casual uniformity of the middle and major terms. Isn't it great how in one sentence there can be more words than you understand? Here the term refers to an invariable and unconditional antecedent as of an effect. Antecedent. What goes before the end. Okay, it means before your conclusion.
What happens first?
Okay, what happens first? The unconditional antecedent of an effect, an effect, refers to an invariable and unconditional consequence of a cause. Right? It means there's going to be a cause and then an effect. Right? So that cause and effect, then, basically it's going to be invariable, and there's not going to be any conditions. Does that make sense? So smoke and fire, you have it, you have that it can vary, and it depends upon the conditions, right? So it won't be as strong. So you have to see that the cause and effect, then their relationship is always fixed. Does that make sense? When an unperceived effect is inferred from a perceived cause, that inference is deemed a purvavat inference. Okay. Okay. When an unperceived effect for a perceived cause. In other words, you have a cause and then there's going to be an effect. Right? Fire will be the cause of smoke. Right? Smoke's not the cause of fire. So when you are perceiving the cause, but the effect you're not seeing, that's purvavat. Right? So purva means before. So we're seeing the cause, not the effect, because the effect is after. So purva means first, before. Right? And then seshavat means the end. What's the result? In other words, you're perceiving the result, and then from that you understand the cause. Right? So the smoke and fire, that will be seshavat. Yes? For example, it will rain because there are dark, heavy clouds in the sky. And whenever there are dark and heavy clouds, it rains. Right? Because the dark clouds are the cause of rain. So when you see the dark clouds, you know there's going to be rain. Right? Does that make sense? So you see the clouds, then you know it's going to rain. Here, the future rain effect is inferred from the appearance of dark, heavy clouds, cause. Seshavat is a reverse type of reasoning in which an unperceived cause is inferred from a perceived effect. For instance, it has rained recently because there is a swift, muddy current in the river. And wherever there's a swift, muddy current in the river, it has recently rained. Right? So you're showing it both ways. But you're starting from the one, you're starting from the cause to effect, and the other you're starting from the effect to the cause. Right? You weren't there when it rains, but you come out and you see the river is moving very swift with a lot of water and very muddy. That means it only does that when it rains. So when it rains, then the river, when it rains, the cause, then the effect is the muddy river. So by seeing the muddy river, you know it rained. Does that make sense? So you have to be able to show it both ways. What's the relationship? Yeah? And finally, in samanyatodrishta, the third type of inference in this system of classification, the invariable concomitance between the middle term and the major term does not depend on a casual uniformity. One term is not inferred from the other because they are uniformly related. In this kind of reasoning, conclusions are based on direct experience and on generally known truths. An example of this sort of inference is the movement of the moon, which is inferred on the basis of its changing position of the sky, although the movement of the moon is not perceived directly by the senses. Right? Does that make sense? The moon is moving because it's in a different place, but you can't see it move. You know what I'm saying? Can you see it move? You sit there and watch it and notice how it has moved by. Yeah? You could, but you don't. Right? Let's give a better example. What about the sun? Right? Because you can't sit there and stare at it. So it's there, and then you come back after half an hour, and now it's up higher. So then you can say it has moved, because its position is changing. So that's not informal. You know, because you can have some... That's direct. They are non-different. Does that make sense? So the movement means it changes position. To move, it means it has to change position. To change position means it has to move. So the two are connected to each other, rather than, you know, one is the cause, one's the effect. You know what I'm saying? Here you do still have cause and effect, because it moved, it changed position. Right? So its movement is the cause, and its effect is the... there. But you're not using it like the Seisha or the Purva. You're using it because the two, they are non-different. Does that make sense? The last general classification system is based on the nature of induction, by which one obtains the knowledge of the invariable concomitance between the middle and major terms of an inference. This system distinguishes among three types of inference. In the first, okay, now we're going to get three types of this. Right, so you can see why someone could be a nyayist and keep themselves very busy. You know, they wouldn't have a problem here. What do you say? Yeah, they have plenty to think about, enough terms, but all this is actually how all, in other words, it's a very, very nice technical analysis of how the relationship between the mind and the intelligence, and then, how you say, mind, intelligence, the senses, and knowledge are all connected, right? The science of exactly how it works. Does that make sense? Yeah? This system distinguishes among three types of inference. In the first, kevalanvayi, the middle term is only positively related to the major term. For example, all knowable objects are nameable. In the second, kevalavyatireka, the middle term is only negatively related to the major term. For example, whoever is dead has no pulse. This person has a pulse, therefore he is not dead. Now what about if they're... Does this include here, like, brain dead? You know, like, they're sitting in the class and, you know, the eyes are glazed over and they don't pay attention and stuff. Would that be inferred here? Because they have a pulse, but they don't seem to be alive. So that would just be, would be consciously dead or academically dead, or what do you think? In the last category, anvayatireki, the middle term is both positively and negatively related to the major term. This is the joint method of both anvaya and vyatireka. For example, all smoky objects are on fire. The hill is smoky, therefore the hill is on fire. The non-fiery object is smoky. No non-fiery object is smoky. The hill is smoky, therefore the hill is on fire. You're using both positive and negative. Does this make any sense? Yes. Some of the other ways, more slowly explaining it, and here it just like packs it all in. So it's kind of, he's not expanding the details. Fallacies of inference. We're almost done. In the Nyaya system, fallacies of inference are called hetva bhasha. This term literally means a reason, hetu, that appears to be valid but is not really so. There are five kinds of fallacies called sabhyabhichara, virudha, sat pratipaksha, asiddha, and badhita. Okay, so these are the five kinds of wrong inferences. I'm not sure, wasn't that one of the ones given in here? General hetva bhasha, yeah, irrational argument. It is reasoning appears to be valid but is really unfounded. This specious reasoning is a fallacy of inference, is therefore discussed later in this chapter. Okay. Alright, so it seems that those other things are things that are elements that are used or can be there, but they are within these main things. So it seems that this whole process of gaining the knowledge is the main thing within the nyayic process, right? And then these others are maybe things that can be used positively, or there are problems within the system. But seem to be important enough that they need to be separately classified. The first, sabhyabhichari, means irregular middle. In a correct inference, the middle term is uniformly and without exception related to the major term. An irregular middle term is destructive to an inference because it can lead to a wrong conclusion. For example, all Himalayan beings are saints. Tigers are Himalayan beings, therefore tigers are saints. Right? And then there's the Gurukul boys. Right? The conclusion of this inference cannot be said to be correct, because the middle term, Himalayan beings, is not invariably related to the major term, saints. Himalayan beings come in many different varieties. Instead of leading one to one single and valid conclusion, such an irregular middle term leads to varied opposite conclusions. Right? So that's why you have to be very, very careful. Okay, then the second one. Virudha, the second kind of fallacy, means contradictory middle. The first one was irregular middle. Now this is a contradictory middle. A contradictory middle is one that dismisses the very proposition it is meant to prove. For example, sound is eternal because it is caused. You understand? If sound is eternal, there's no cause. So to say sound is eternal because it's caused, then just by its presentation, you already have defeated the argument. Yes, no? Whatever has a cause is non-eternal. And so, here the middle term, cause, does not prove the eternity of sound, but rather confirms its non-eternity. The distinction between an irregular middle and a contradictory middle is that while the irregular middle fails to prove its conclusion, the contradictory middle proves the opposite of what is intended. Right? In other words, if it could be applied in so many different ways, then it's irregular. You know, not that it's not true in some cases, but contradictory means it's just not true. It just proves itself wrong. In trying to prove your thing right, you proved it wrong. Yes?
I don't understand.
How does it prove it wrong? Means if you say sound is eternal, right? That means there's no beginning, middle, or end. So if you say sound is eternal because it is caused, right? In other words, something is the cause of sound. Right? So then the cause means it's not eternal. You understand? Because there's a middle. You know? Yes?
I understood what the minor, major, and middle terms are in the example of smoke and fire, but I can't understand what their principal meaning is. Like, what is the minor term?
Okay. What you're doing is you're starting, the minor term means basically what is your situation or what is the object that you're discussing, right? This object that is being discussed, then there's some further detail of it. You know, like you have a primary noun, and then you have a secondary noun. So the secondary noun is defining the primary noun, right? So the in this case the hill is the minor, because it's a discussion about the hill, but it's a discussion about a state or some quality of the hill. Does that make sense? So that's actually the more important aspect, right? So now in this, we can see inference means you have two things that are connected to each other. So when one is there, the other is present. So if you see one of them, then you conclude the other one is there. Does that make sense? Okay. You have the pumps, right? But the pumps aren't the actual thing you're really talking about. You know, it means you're talking about it, but that's not the point you're trying to make. You see the pumps, and you see Nanda Nanda. Okay? So now, what is the... And so, that's the middle term, Nanda Nandana. But, you know, so here you're doing... So what is going to be the effect of Nanda Nandana at the pumps?
Chaos.
So therefore, you can say, there's going to be chaos at the pumps. That's the point. You see Nanda Nanda at the pumps, you can say there's going to be trouble at the pumps. right? Why? Because Nandananda means chaos. Right? But this is, we're starting from the cause and then the effect is there. Right? Or you could look at it the other way. There's the pumps and you hear a lot of trouble there, but you don't see anything. And so therefore you can go, because Nandananda creates trouble. Since there's trouble at the pumps, Nandananda must be there.
That's just the inverse.
That's the inverse. In other words, one, you're starting from the cause, right? That's the Purva, whatever it was. Purvavat, right? So the cause is, he's the cause of trouble. So if you see pumps and him, then you know there's going to be, you can infer trouble. If you see the pumps and trouble, means in other words, this is Seshavat, you already see the result, right? Then you can understand what's the cause.
So, but is the major term corresponding to the cause, or is the major term corresponding to the...
Result. Result. It can be either way. The point is you have the situation. Then you have one of two related points. Right? So then when this point, you can see one of them, then you know the other is there.
So the one that's inferred is the major term.
The one that is inferred is the major term, because the one that you can see is how you're going to get it. In other words, you're making a connection between the minor and the major. So what's in between the minor and the major? The middle, right? The middle is the one that you can tell, you can infer, because the middle is connected to the minor and is connected to the major, right? So in other words, the minor, what do you call it, Nandanandana, makes major trouble. Right? So, in other words, the middle is what connects them. Right? So pumps is the element. So either there's trouble there, you know it's Nandanandana. You can see that, you can tell there's trouble. There's noise, yelling, screaming, something, people bouncing off of, you know, pumps and stuff like that. Or, you know, something's going on like that. Somebody's yelling and screaming, give me it back, give me it back, you know, like that. Then you notice it's there. So that, you know what I'm saying? So then that means there's, you know, so when you see the pumps, trouble, Nandanandana is this, that's the cause. So you're inferring Nandanandana. It might not be Nandananda. It might be Narad Muni. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, that's why the thing is now Nandananda and trouble always go together, right? But the thing is, but it also has a broader range, because here it's very narrow because you're making it as one person. But if you make it that trouble is there caused by Badmashis, you know, those who are troublemakers. So you could say, you know, there is a troublemaker, therefore there's going to be trouble. Or there's trouble because there's a troublemaker there. That will always be establishable, right? So this other is more of a detail. So therefore, if you're in the ashram, you can hear the noise. You know there's trouble, but next to you... Narad Muni is stealing someone else's gumshoe, then you know it's not him at the pumps making trouble. Yes, then it must be none of them. you understand?
But in any case, the situation would be the minor. How then the major would be the inferred, and then how
yes.
You get there is the medium.
Yes, the middle is, you could say, the medium. In other words, the medium for understanding the unseeable or unperceivable, because this is inference, not perception. In other words, you can perceive the minor, you can perceive the middle, but you can't perceive the inferred, right? Which is the major, right? But because the middle and the major are connected, therefore if you see one, you know the other's there. Right? Does that make sense? You know, does that make sense? So, you know, they're always connected, you know, like, you know, nice day, Gauranga and marbles, right? They go together. You know, like that, yes. The sign. Yeah, the sign, the linga, means that's the symptom of it. Does that make sense? Yeah. Is that... put into terms now you can understand after all this big fancy words. Okay? So all it is different ways that you can tell that if they're always connected, if they're sometimes connected, not always, under one system, they're connected, on another they might not be, so it's not as strong. So you have to get something that is based on its nature. Right? So that's what you're trying to establish here, is that it's very conclusively, you can always connect the middle to the major. Right? Because you already know that the middle and the minor is connected, because you can see it. Right? Like that. Right? Or you could say, you could take Nanda Nanda is the minor, right? Minor term. But you see this glint in his eye, right? That's the middle. So you know there's going to be some trouble. Right? You understand? But that would be, you're using, in that way, what do you call it? The alokika perception. You know, in other words, it's not something that is directly perceivable. It means it is, but at the same time, it's by experience that you know that these are connected. Does that make sense? Because you have to use your mind to understand and translate. That look on his face means trouble.
So are alokika and inference synonymous, or is alokika based on memory while inference is just you're figuring it out now?
Well, you're figuring out now. It's not necessarily based on memory, because you'd have to have memory because you know what is the nature of something. But it's based on a truth rather than on just on the memory. Because the memory is, okay, when I saw a subject like that, I tasted it was good. Therefore, when I see it again, I can say this will be good. And it may be correct. You know what I'm saying? But that's why perception sometimes is not correct. But here, it's based on that these go together. You know what I'm saying? Yes. Oh, this class ends here. They're all to a degree, but you still make difference because you can see how fine the system is getting. So you have to, you have to make those differences like that so that you understand the mechanics, because there's a slightly different mechanics. But the one is based on previously perception, then you got to the alokika. So that means all alokika is based on that. You know what I'm saying? So you always have to do something. You gave the example of the table. You see the wooden table, you could say it's a table. But how do you know it's a table? You're still putting together, wooden piece of wood carved in this shape is a table. Because otherwise you just say it is a piece of wood. You know what I'm saying? That's the direct observable thing, but that you see it's a table. It has a touch of that, but it's not the major aspect. You know what I'm saying? Because everybody by perception will say it's a table. So it's not something that you need something beyond the observable to be able to understand it. Though it has that element within it. That was just being made as a side point, is that always everything interacts with each other. Okay, I gotta go. That's the summary.
Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.